So it's like you're literally next to a producing mine. You've got no real permitting risk because you know they're good to go, right? So Mexico, my point is it's going to take them longer to advance the Mexican projects. So instead of just feeling sorry for themselves, they went out and did something about it. And that's what more companies need to do is find a way to pivot.
John Fenech, how you doing, man?
Good, Andy. How are you today?
Good. It's finally good to get to meet up with you. I'm somewhat familiar with your work and your background. And let's set this up here about the macro, the environment with investing, if you would, in these small cap mining stocks specifically, and then also uranium, which is on a tear. So let's start with some small cap mining. Give us the macro on that and what you're seeing.
So obviously the two largest ETFs in mining are GDX and GDXJ, managed by Ben Eck. GDX is something I look at more because it's the large to mid cap ETF. And if you look at the price right now, I think it closed right around 2590-ish. 2562 is the multi-month low, and that was a spike low. So kind of scary price action in the big cap stuff today. Very high quality names like Newmont, Agnico, all getting hits. The GDXJ, we've said on numerous shows, has been extremely disappointing over long periods of time, meaning 3, 5, 7 years. And we own some of that, we own a lot more GDX, as core holdings that we build, satellites around, which we can talk about some specific names there. But the macro looks pretty darn bad. And I would say that, I can't remember other than one time in my, career since the 90s where these mining stocks are so bifurcated from, let's say, the gold price. And you can see that, pick whatever you want, GDX to the S&P, Barron's Gold Index to the S&P, HUI to the S&P. It's all looking like here's the market and here's mining stocks, right? So you can draw an X, if you drew both of them on top of each other. And it's like, wow, okay. I mean, there's got to be an entry point somewhere in here. How we gauge some of that with clients is looking at different things like, point and figure, or look at RSI, relative strength index. We look at a bunch of different things, kind of gauge where a bottom may be. But it is pretty frustrating in the sense that I see all clients' pain because I'm alongside with them, right? I take risk just like they do. And I'm not just a talking head saying stuff and never doing anything with my own money, right? So when you see GDX at 32, really, at the beginning of the year, you think, okay, well, 33 is major resistance. So we can take out 33, we're on our way to 35. And it did the exact opposite and punched up on that 32, 33, failed, got to 30 and failed. And then now we're at 26, right? So it's like very frustrating starts in the year for investors, but that's why you have to do the homework. And we do a really good job of that, calling CEOs, calling, heads of IR, meeting with these people at conferences. I just went to Vancouver and met with 21 different people in 2 days. It's frustrating, but they're sharing in the frustration. If you run a good project and you've got real ounces in the ground, and let's say you're going into production in a year and a half, 2 years, you've got a path. And it's okay to buy those things cheaply now because you're going to get rewarded later in life.
Let's unpack there. Let's start with the ETFs. You mentioned offline, and I've been noticing this well. If you've invested in an ETF, GDX, for example, 5+ years ago, you would be down. And relative to other different names, if you would, why is that? You come in from the ETF world.
Well, there's a couple of different reasons. One is that these ETFs both rebalance 4 times a year, and they're rebalanced based on different metrics, such as market cap size, things that the company can't control, right? You can't control your market cap sometimes, right? So if you slip below, let's say 750 million as a larger cap name, well, you're going to automatically be eliminated from GDX.
Right.
So there's this constant churning every 90 days that goes on. And I wouldn't say it's like 20% of the ETF or anything, but it's significant in that you're eliminating potentially good names that are just falling short of one metric that Ben Eck has, right? So it's not a perfect science. But you know, it's good to have representation in your portfolio in core holdings like these ETFs. In the silver world, there's three. There's SILJ, which is the smallest cap. There's SIL and there's SLVT. All three of those represent the silver equity world. But again, like these are just like 1% positions for us, 2% positions. We're not putting a lot of our money there because it's passive money, right? Really, you're just buying a basket of stocks within that little area and getting exposure. But we want to overweight certain things where we have more conviction, you know, based on public information. So if we see a company's coming up on production, right, like that's very bullish. If the stock's trading near a low, why is it trading near a low? If you get taken out like that, like you saw Marathon get taken out recently by Caliber for about a 30% premium. We're not in this for 30% premiums though. So I guess that should be another thing we can talk about perhaps today or on another show, which is we want to see ownership by larger institutions or shareholders that are strong hands, meaning they're not going to want a 20 to 30% takeover because that's what we call a take under, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not interested in busting my butt for 10 to 12 hours a day doing this for 20, 30% gains. So, you know, in a daily today, I would take that. But, you know, generally speaking, it's like hard work in this sector. You have to grind. And so we don't look at this for a 20 to 30% total return over a long period of time.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And the negative, the downside, again, that you just touched on with ETFs, it's like when they got to rotate out and they're more than likely selling these companies at the low, and that's when they should be being bought, to be quite frank. So, and by the way, I have exposure to GDX and I've traded in and out and been an investor as well. So, but I get the frustration. My next question is let's talk about value going in a, I mean, it's almost like who wants to hear about that going in today like this, or even just the last, you know, month or so, or even last couple of years. But I recently, what sparked my interest in this is I recently heard an interview with Ross Beaty, who literally said, and again, this was before today, this was, I don't know, 2 weeks ago. He's like, back up the truck. This is what you need to do. He had never seen so much value in some of his favorite names. And he just said, I'm just going to buy, you know, and you're going to make money. So let's talk about that value. You touched briefly upon it. You've never seen in your career, you've mentioned, or you hadn't seen that you're aware of the kind of value that you're seeing now. Talk about that. And then what's going to take for some of these stocks to get a bid?
Ross and Rick Rule and some of these guys have been more outspoken. Rob McEwen, you're seeing doing a lot more deals recently, which is very, very positive. These are very powerful guys in the sector. And so, you know, what is it going to take for a bid? Wow. You know, that's the $64,000 question. I think the liquidity really is terrible right now in the sector. And I'm saying that about, like, I work in the US, so I'm looking at OTC tickers, right? And so they sometimes mirror the Canadian, you know, action, but with much less volume, right? So, you know, for example, there's a stock that I've been interested in, Golden Metal Resources. They just launched an OTC in November. So their volume is small. It's 20 to 40,000 shares, let's say, but their London ticker is doing hundreds of thousands of shares. So you have to kind of look at the parent ticker, if you will, to get a sense for what the OTC might do, which is, again, some of the work we teach our clients, because it's important to know how this action is being driven, right? Country to country. So what is it going to take to get a bid? I mean, look, institutions need to come into our sector. That's the real, you know, answer. And that's the world I come from, is working at Merrill Lynch, JP Morgan. These guys don't want to do anything with our sector right now. They're looking at gold and getting interested, but they want to see a breakout, right? And we failed right at year end. It hasn't been a big failure, but to come off of like really knocking at an all-time high and now, you know, going down, what is it, another 3.5%, you know, year to date, it's frustrating, and it's not going to get the generalist wealthy investor interested when they can buy Bitcoin at over 50,000 and make money, right? They can buy tech at all-time highs and make money. These are distractions that are really detracting away from interest in our sector right now. So you need to see, in my opinion, Jordan Redburn, a couple of my peers have said this, you need to see a a drawdown in the S&P, in the NASDAQ, in the Russell. And we saw that today. So hopefully that's the start of something where, you know, that CPI number was huge today.
Yep.
Andy, because we missed by 0.2%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that miss meaning a beat of like what the expectation was, 2.2% higher, literally turned the Fed, you know, a watch tool on its head, meaning that March 20th to me is completely off the table at this point now.
Right.
May 1st is looking less and less likely. I mean, we came into this morning with a 53% probability of a rate cut starting May 1st. And now I just looked right before recording, it's down to 36%. So that was at 90% around January 1. So yeah, that was factoring in, you know, almost an assurity that we're having a rate cut May 1st. Now it's about a third, you know, of where it was, which is insane. So, you know, to me, I don't know why people don't understand this that are buying the broad market. It's like, you have to look at read the tea leaves daily right now. And things like CPI, non-farm payrolls, GDP, this all goes into the Fed decision-making.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Fed decision-making here. CPI came in really high, but let's game that out again, if you would, as it relates to what you do. So you really want to start making a list now, if you would. Do you want to start nibbling now on some names, some really good companies, and then create a position over the next 3 to 4 months with, I don't want to say hope, but with maybe the idea that the Fed is going to have to cut?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I'll probably get shelled for this, but you can look back at my work. I could go back to spring of 2022. I was calling for rate hikes when all of my peers were pretty much calling for rate cuts by September of 2022, because they're talking their book, right? Everyone has a book. Everyone has conviction of what they're doing. But I try to be honest with clients to say, look, this is just the environment we're in and you have to live with it. And like I was told by David Lynn at Kitco, hey, you're the only guy I've interviewed here that's talking for rates going higher. And that turned out to be true. I also called for CPI raising higher pretty much in the same interviews in that spring of 2022. And now in November of last year on Kitco, I said, hey, look, this is bullish activity here, because it was right around November 15th. If you remember, we got that, you know, CPI dropping, and then the market loved it, but it got ahead of itself clearly now in the rearview mirror almost 3 months later. So yeah, I mean, look, I think the Fed is all important right now. You have to be understanding not only what the Fed's messaging is, what the dot plot looks like, what the minutes look like. You have to be on top of that stuff. And that's one of the things that our macro service does for clients. You know, we were out there 1 minute after the CPI number this morning saying this is going to be a rough day. And so maybe if you have limit orders out there, you might want to pull back the bid. We didn't suggest that, but like my tone probably suggested that to people that know me, because I just want to be able to tell people kind of like how I see it when I see breaking news.
Got it. Let's go a little bit smaller then with your evaluation of companies. You mentioned you met with 21 different companies when you were in Vancouver. What are you looking for when you're looking to write them a check, when you're looking to invest in them? Sure. Are you looking at jurisdiction? Are you looking at management? You're looking at about how much cash they have. What's your important top 3 or 4, you know, things that you look for, bullets that you look for?
I always put management number one. I'd say cash right now might be number two, if not definitely number three, because a way to get cash. You know, I mean, if you have a strategic shareholder that will add more, right? If you've got like a fund, like Rob McEwen just did this recently with a stock, he was at 2%, now he's at 4%. So that's a way to be non-dilutive to shareholders like you and me, right? So that's great. But yeah, asking those questions of like, what's the game plan when you get the cash? Like, are you just going to put it all into the ground? Are you going to do some conferences? Are you going to do some marketing? Like, what is the deal? And for me, I love to see companies that have balance between those things, because so many of them will just say, I'm putting it in the ground. Okay, I get that. But then let's look at the results in 2022 and 2023 you're getting from putting it in the ground. Like, you have to assess yourself as a company on an ongoing basis, right? Like that's what's important and is not getting done enough, I don't think, in our sector. And I have CEOs, dozens of CEOs that are friends of mine. So it's like, I really, I feel for both sides, right? Because the clients are saying, what's going on over here? I thought these were good results. And the CEO is telling me like a day before, you know, at a conference, like, you know, our results are just fantastic. So there's a disconnect between what the company thinks of their results and what the market thinks of their results, right? We're seeing like a lot of good grow results being sold off and used at liquidity events. So my personal opinion is that companies need to do a better job of looking at alternative ways, such as like your show, other shows, getting out their message through means that aren't just the traditional ways of just going to a conference and standing at a booth.
Right. Got it. Are there any jurisdictions that as of right now that you would stay away from? Again, looking at stuff going on in Asia, Africa is always higher risk or perceived higher risk, if you would. Talk to me about that.
We'll take risk in jurisdictions that are suffering for the time being or are just coming out of a cycle where there's been suffering. And I'll give you two examples. One would be Vortex Metals right now. They had in Mexico two projects. David Jones was the lead GO. He unfortunately passed away unexpectedly. And the company looked at things and said, let's pivot and get project in Chile. So like they're right next to a producing mine in Chile. I had an hour-long call with them last week with John Larson, who's their director of one of the directors of the company. This guy's got an extensive background in geology, worked 16 years at BHP, and the stock's at 6.5 cents, right? So it's like you're literally next to a producing mine. You've got no real permitting risk because you know they're good to go, right? So Mexico, my point is it's going to take them longer to advance the Mexican projects. So instead of just feeling sorry for themselves, they went out and did something about it. And that's what more companies need to do is find a way to pivot. Another one would be Aftermath Silver.
Can you give me the ticker on that?
Oh, on Vortex? Yeah. It's BMSSF.
Got it. Go ahead.
And then Aftermath Silver, AAGFF, did the same thing, right? They're getting shelled because they were in Peru. You had Castillo in office doing all sorts of crazy things for quite some time. He gets jailed, 14 months ago? Yet their stock hasn't rebounded. They got killed because of their Peruvian exposure. And now, even though things are better, they're still not up. So as a value manager, we love, taking a bet on Peru, taking a bet on Argentina, right? You've got a new leader in Argentina. The same thing goes for Aber Silver, ABPRF, They've got a huge project in Diablillos, which is in the Salta province of Argentina, which is one of the best provinces to operate in. Because you've got very lithium rich land all around you, right? And even though lithium's just crushed in the last 12 months, these companies are still going to make money there over time. And so what's happening, according to John, the CEO, is that all of the roads, all of the permitting, all that stuff is getting done around them and the infrastructure is getting built for free, mills, et cetera, right? So like your CapEx goes down because you're not going to have to do all that yourself when you go into production in a few years. So, those are three examples, I guess, of, jurisdictional risk, however calculated risk when you're looking at the situation.
Give me some specifics and then let's pivot a little bit ourselves. Let's pivot to some industrial metals, if you would. And then we'll wrap it up with uranium. So talk to me a little bit about copper. I've had a lot of questions about copper. We hear about it all the time, how copper is significantly undervalued as a metal, how the world needs new copper, and yet copper is, at historical lows. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure. So, we pointed out, I spoke at Beaver Creek, Colorado's conference in September, and I had copper as one of my topics. And I said, look, Goldman Sachs 2 months earlier in July of 2023, has come out and said they believe that copper will be at 15,000 a metric ton by December of 25. So they kind of looked out 2.5 years and said, here's where we think it is. Well, it's at 8,000 right now. So, just imagine that if the copper price goes up that much, that's going to be like a 90% plus gain on copper, not on copper stocks.
Right.
That's why we love copper stocks right now, because Goldman Sachs, has a decent track record in commodities and obviously a big voice. So, you know, it's not just Goldman, though. It's so many other people, including myself, that think copper will have a better 2024 than they did in 2023, especially if we get a soft landing. I mean, that's a given. But then 2025, I think you're going to start seeing, you know, people realize that you can't just flip a switch and turn on a copper project. So, you know, Barron's has talked about this. Goldman's talked about this. There's a number of bigger institutions that have talked about it, but it's still far enough away, Andy, that people haven't panicked yet. But, you know, we're going to get some panicking at some point, and we're at, what, 360, 370 right now. We'll be over $4 at some point this year. And once you cross that 425 kind of level, I think you can see 450. And then all these copper juniors and, of course, the producers are going to look fantastic. The way we have traditionally played it, we don't own any of it right now, is COPX for the larger stuff. COPX is an ETF that deals with mid to large cap copper names. Think of it like a GDX for copper. And then, you know, Sprott just recently came out with an ETF in the smaller space. I don't remember the ticker there. I don't own any of that either. But we typically will buy copper juniors, you know, because right now they're just thrown out the window. I mean, we own Granite, Creek Copper, GCXXF. We own VR Resources, VRRCF. I mean, there's just, we just mentioned Vortex Metals, BMSSF, which is copper in Chile. So there's so many names right now that are trading at literally like 3 to 5 year lows. You could pretty much take your pick. And that's how it feels to me right now, Andy, is almost like it did in the beginning of 2020, you know, during the pandemic when copper really started to get a bid. Like, that's where these prices have kind of just like retraced to. It's unbelievable. So there's some really good names there. If you align yourself with a professional like myself or someone else that's doing the research, it's a lot of work to kind of discern, will this company make it or not? Right. Cause if you have copper go the other way and go from 370 to 3, you're going to see a lot of these names start to buckle.
Yeah. Two things you brought up. Yeah. I would absolutely do. If you can't do the research, you got to pair or team up with somebody that does put in the work, especially nowadays. And the big thing is, I think, is just getting through however long that takes until when copper inevitably rises. But that's true with all of these stocks, I feel. And it also reminds me, I remember looking at uranium. This was last June, and we're just talking about, uranium is going to really make a run here someday. We really need it. And just going through all the fundamentals. And that was literally the breakout in June, and then it doubled since then. So I think there could be a very, especially copper, I think we are setting ourselves up for something similar than what happened to uranium in 23. So speaking of uranium, give me your thoughts on that. I've spoken to a couple of different analysts on here. It was somewhat mixed. For my own opinion now, one of them, he's out, completely out. He played this run, and now he's looking for other things to allocate his money to. Another one is, he's like, back up the truck. This is has a lot of life to it. The reason is because of the supply that came out with, as he stated, things changed. The information's changed in the last couple of weeks. And so he's like, back up the truck. Any weakness on uranium is a gift. So what are your thoughts on uranium, and how are you and your clients looking to play?
I would probably align myself with the second guess that you were explaining, because I think that things have changed from a supply perspective. We saw the CAS news, you know, I guess 10 days ago. CCJ didn't come out with, I guess, as much of a dire report that people wanted. Canva go last week, and that created a bit of a sell-off. But it's natural to have sell-offs in any rally. And so that's probably, you know, we have 17 or 18% cash in our portfolio right now for a reason. We want to be ready to pounce on pullbacks in things that we like. We like uranium as a subsector right now, because it's the only one that's got momentum, in my opinion, in terms of equities. And it's right. The only one that's got the ability to raise cash. I mean, look at what happened in Q4. Uranium Royalty, UROY, raised a bunch of money. Fission raised a bunch of money. Then Denison raised a bunch of money. Like, these guys all raised money at a great time. But then look at the charts of these stocks after that. They absorbed that problem, meaning a financing, right? A 10 to 12% haircut. And then just moved on. Like it was, if that was a gold or silver stock, it would have taken them 4 to 8 weeks to absorb that. And it seemed like they absorbed this within days. So, I mean, that's when you see something like that, you have to kind of look at that and say, that's different, you know? So we are keeping our eyes on a lot of juniors in the space because, you know, I pointed out on numerous podcasts that spot was running last year, but the equities didn't catch up, right? So we were putting our money where our mouth was and buying stuff in August, September. We bought Forum Energy at 4 cents and 5 cents, which is FDCFF. It's trading at 11 now. Because Rick's got 40 years of experience in uranium. And so like, are they drilling at the current moment? No. You know, is that a negative? It might be if you're a short-term trader, because there's not going to be that kind of news flow that you want necessarily in February. But when you look out a couple of months, they are going to be drilling their new discovery from September, Thelon Basin. And so basically it's like, if you can wait a few months, you're going to get results and they're probably going to be decent as follow-up to what they already have done. Standard Uranium had good news this week and last week. They acquired, I think, 4 or 5 new properties, STTDF, and really changed their business model since I bought them 2 years ago. So they're looking at acquiring a bunch of different projects right now and then monetizing those at higher prices, as well as drilling. So they've got, you know, a fully funded drill program for this year. That stock looks like it's primed for a breakout from arguably a low base. And then we've really just started to look at a couple of others. You know, I Platinx is one that I just started to buy last year, PANXF, because they're going to be doing a spinoff of Green Canada, which is their uranium piece for shareholders. And so whenever I can get free shares of anything, I'm interested. Again, the share price is like at $1. It's trading at 2.5 cents. So when you look at something like that and say, I can get something for free and it's trading at 2.5 cents, I mean, it's got a very low risk profile is my point. And so we yes, value managers, we're cheap. We want to buy things cheaply and exit, you know, at higher prices.
Good. Okay. So lastly, give me your contact info and with you and if they're looking to use your services.
Sure. So our website's BennettConsulting.com. My personal email will be in the show notes and, I'm very responsive. We don't, yep. You know, just hand out information for free to the general public because I'm running a business, right? So like I look at it like, when someone comes to me, I want to vet them and we take less clients on than anyone else that I know. We had 40 clients approach us in the last 2 months. We took about 8. So, you know, we're not taking on every client because I want to make sure that these clients understand the risk, right? So if someone comes to me from Bitcoin and thinks that this is going to be a 50%, 100% gainer in 3 months, not going to happen. You know, and so we politely say no, thank you. So we want people that understand this is going to be a 1 to 3 year process from here. And there's going to be tremendous money that can be made if you know what to look for.
Got it. All right. Well, John, thank you so much for your time and yeah. Love to have you on again.
Me too. Thanks, Andy.